Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
What's up? Hey, man, what's your name?
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm still nasally, right? And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
You just, you know, I was wondering who you were coming in, man. Your hair is, you know, it's not all... What do they call it? the style. It's
There's a name for it?
A savage or something.
No, it's not a style. It's just literally me not having enough time in the morning to put the stuff I need to put in it.
But there is. I know, because a couple of my grandchildren have spent a great deal of time fashioning this hair going every direction in a what looks like a totally uncultivated way, but it's strictly cultivated.
Well, I do remember many years ago, and by the way, it's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing,
man? Well, good morning to you. We were both traveling last week. I think we were both on the East. You were in New Jersey. I was in Boston.
I was in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
And you know what? You can have it. Who wants to? It took an hour and a half to go 2 miles from LaGuardia Airport to my hotel room.
Oh.
2 hours.
2 hours, yeah.
Who wants to live like that, man?
Yeah, I mean, I was in Boston, took the massive, you know, the subway system. Subway right. System's fast. That worked great. But, yeah, if you get into a cab, it's a different story. Surface transport's a lot different than subterranean.
I mean, I just could not believe... Who wants to live like that?
I'll tell you what else is different. Go to a restaurant or do something that costs money. The price is real high in both New York and Boston. Those are two expensive cities.
So what are you telling me? I was in a Holiday Inn, and the Holiday Inn price was $400 a night.
There you go.
I'm like... Wait a minute.
Was the Holiday Inn Four Seasons? Is that the
name? No, Holiday Inn.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Holiday Inn Express.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah, so, you know. And I'm like, because there was almost nothing else, right? And they know when you have to have it, they're going to punish you.
Sure.
Yeah, and then it said, well, you get a free breakfast. So I got up to get my free breakfast, and they said, oh, wait a minute. Do you have that in writing? And then I said, wait a minute. I don't have anything in writing. And so the lady says, well, let me go ask the manager. And the manager says, does he have it in writing? Get out of here. Let me get back. And the New Yorkers that I was hanging out with, you know, they were calling me, oh, here comes this country hick. He's in the big lights, right? He's in the big lights, and he doesn't know. We're joking, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in the big lights, and he doesn't know how to handle it. I said, man, listen, it has nothing. 2 hours to get to where I was going in that short period of time. I don't care. You guys can have that. You can call me a country hick all you want to, but there's more to life to me than spending time, that kind of time. And if you, Sandy, look at that, the people who live there and the amount of time they spend commuting, how much time are they taking off their lives just to do that?
Oh, yeah. I remember when I went to graduate school in New York, and the choice of going there, you could live in Manhattan, it would be just great. But if you decided to live out in the suburbs...
If you could afford to live in Manhattan.
Yeah, but then if you go move out to the suburbs, the commutes were... You know, people would... And it was regular, an hour and a half to get to work. 3 hours a day.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't... You know, let me come back to the Midwest, right? Mm. I'll be that country bumpkin that the guy says, oh, he has on shoes. He's to me. I said, okay, man, yeah. I got you. But anyway.
Well, Boston was something. I'll tell you, I went to an event out there. I coached boys rowing, but the Milwaukee team of boys and girls went out there. This is a thing called the Head of the Charles. It's the biggest rowing regatta in the world. 11,000 people participating, and it's from high school on up to older people, Olympic boats, all kinds of stuff, and 2,000 boats rowing, and it takes all day, 3 days, basically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's an unbelievable event, I can happily report the Milwaukee team did very well, so they both finished in the top 15 out of 90.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's really great. And before I forget, let me thank Roger Quindell, our mutual friend, for holding down the fort while I was gone. Roger, thank you. Really appreciate it. You did a great job from what I hear. great job from what I hear. So thanks again, my friend. Sandy, how can we not talk about the Packers?
I think we should now I'm almost to the point where we should not talk about the Packers. We've got to, I understand, but wow.
It is. I was reading something, might have been early this morning, and the Packers aren't going to win their division. It's almost safe to say now. So if they're not going to win their division, their only hope for the playoffs is through the wild card.
Right.
The Giants are 6-1. They're kind of like in a position for the wild. The Packers are going to miss the playoffs. And so just sheer numbers, the numbers, the way they've crunched the numbers, they can almost see right now that the Packers aren't going to make the playoffs. Can you imagine?
Well, I'm number one to say that it's never going to happen, because the league is crazy. In fact, the league is crazy right now because who's on top of it? The Jets, the Giants.
Yeah.
And, what's clear is that pundits aren't pundits. The people who are supposed to be able to predict what's going to happen because, the Packers were Super Bowl favorites,
right,
and the Buccaneers,
and 3-4.
And all the talk was about the Kyle Shanahan tree of coaching and how great all those teams were and were going to do, and they aren't doing well. My view is the league has maybe caught on to that whole system of offense because, Nathaniel Hackett, who came out of that tree, and LaFleur, and all of them the offenses are struggling. And they're making their players look very regular. And some of these players are supposedly, for instance, quarterbacks. It's a number of super-named quarterbacks who are in the system who are currently being revealed as being less than super.
So let me say this to you, Sandy. I know you're the eternal optimist. The Packers play the Bills, then the Cowboys.
I know.
Then the Eagles.
This could be the worst. This could end up being, actually, it could end up being like the worst season the Packers have had since we were fans in the 80s.
So you saw the schedule.
Yeah.
It is brutal.
Well, the fact is they are just finishing what was viewed as the easy part of the schedule.
Yeah.
They were supposed to come out of this part of the schedule undefeated or close to undefeated.
They still got the Vikings. They've got the Dolphins and the Titans. And, doesn't look – and clearly, if you look at them, they're in total disarray.
Yeah.
So there's no way by next week. Oh, who is here? Mike Crute. Hey, good morning, Crute. What's going on?
And the Packers talk. Sounds like Sports Talk Live going on here.
Yeah.
How can we not talk about the Packers, Crute? So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts turn to the political, gentlemen. Oh. Look at the last time the Packers got off to a terrible start like this.
The Democrats,
I believe it was 2018, and Scott Walker was the governor, And he was the guy who always used to wrap himself in every sports team, right? And I always thought to myself, well, if the Packers / the Badgers got off to a bad start, it could be really bad. Well, Scott Walker narrowly was defeated. And I think the Packers were terrible that year in 18.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, it's going to be bad on the incumbents if the whole state of Wisconsin is in a sour mood because their team's terrible.
Do you think people actually, Crudy, I mean, you know, take that into consideration?
I would agree. I think mood is affected, unfortunately, in Wisconsin. You know, there are people who are breaking their television sets watching the Packers, and their mood is spoiled until the next Packer victory.
Right, Sandy, it's right track, wrong track. And I got to tell you, when the Packers are on the wrong track, the state of Wisconsin's on the wrong track.
So, Crudy, you had to destroy the morning with that, huh?
Well, you guys are the ones that brought it up. I just wanted to point out the obvious. Yeah.
You know, Sandy, we're going to talk about how deep are we going to dig
this grave here?
but Crudy, from the perspective of the team, is any thoughts on where the Packers are headed?
I don't know if I agree with your they're going to miss the wild card talk. I mean, they're 3-4. There's a lot of season. Isn't it a 17-game season now?
Didn't you hear who they got to play?
We still got 10 games left. They could go – if they win 10 straight and they're 13-4, they're going to the playoffs, right? There's no doubt.
Ifs and nuts were candies and butts, what a wonderful world it would be, Crudy.
I tell you what, if they lose on, if they lose to the Bills, and they lose one more after that, they're going to lose to the Bills, and then it's going to be awfully hard for the incumbents. I don't know if it's worse for Tony Evers or Ron Johnson, but I'd be nervous if the incumbents, if the Packers keep losing.
Here's what we need to do. We need to start helping people understand that there is so much more to the world than Packer football. And we need to talk about the beautiful leaves and the things that are uplifting, because I'm afraid the Bills are very good this year. So,
Hey, Crudy, we got to run. Thank you for the call. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789 is Monday. So that's Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I was reading this article in Newsweek over the weekend, and it talked about 80% of Americans think that the opposing party will destroy the country. Now, help me try to understand. I mean, I know why we're here. I truly know why we're there. But the inherent dangers in that statement is what's going to destroy America. I'm sitting here worried about, well, the Republicans are going to destroy America. The Republicans think the Democrats are going to destroy America. It's that thought process that's going to be at the root of destroying America.
Yeah, I mean, I think on a number of shows we've talked about it, but I think it's this new sense of patriotism and what it is that's a patriot, and it's this protection of each person's concept of what is America, the fabric that is the underlying America, and that concept has crept into the political polarity. So the belief in America truly is that the other party, if they take control, are going to destroy what is fundamental about America. So what does that mean? That means that basically defeating that other party becomes an end that is so important that it justifies the means. So that, you know, that's why I think the Republicans have so openly looked at voter suppression and all the processes that are ongoing, even January 6th. January 6th was viewed as the act of a bunch of patriots to make sure that Biden and the Democratic Party didn't take control of the country and ruin it. They were there to defend the fabric of America. And so when you get, when we get that polar, we're not just dealing with partisan politics anymore.
You know, Sonny, I don't know how you get out of that, because we hear it even with the callers that we have and the differences that they have. It's never about the things that we have in common. It's these differences, and the differences are always around the political spectrum and the way people see the country. And so just from everything that I've read and everything that I see and talk with people, it's so polarizing that who's going to change that? Who's coming to change that? I don't see anybody on the horizon.
Well, I think if we could get a political process that would start talking about the issues that people face in everyday life and stop talking about nostalgia. Let's get back to when it all felt good. You know, make America great again is just an appeal to nostalgia. It's just an appeal to stop the wheels of progress, or to stop the wheels of change at least, and get back to what we were, which is, you know, an impossibility. But it's a yearning that resides in all of us to make our life what we hope it or wish it could be. And what we ought to be doing is focusing on the issues we face in our life and building the American the America that it needs to be supporting people. If we had, you know, like I said, if we were working on getting daycare and health care and solving people's problems, and if the political process seemed to be solving people's problems, we could stop just getting into this imagination game of let's get back to what we used to be and let's get on with getting to be the better country that we could be. But we're not doing that. And the wheels of progress in this country have stopped. You know, political process is not only polarized, it's paralyzed. And the paralysis is what's caused everyone to start worrying about what America, you know, this whole fabric of America thing. Because if we were actually doing things, solving things, people would have a different sense.
You know, Sandy, it's... there are some things, nostalgic things that help create us that we all wish everybody got a chance to enjoy when life was simpler. Okay? Mm-hmm. But you're not going to abdicate that for progress. You're not going to say, the horse and buggy. We should go back to the horse and buggy and forget about all the improvements in transportation. We're not going to, the plow.
The Amish.
Yeah,
have hung on to that, but I don't see that there's a huge conversion to back to Amish. In terms of people wanting to seize that particular kind of life. So, you know, people have moved into modern life. They aren't going to give up their cell phones
and their
smartphones. You know, so life. There's progress, and with progress, there's change, but I really think that it's the paralysis of government and the failure of government to be able to do anything that has caused people to start to dwell on just the social fabric and to start focusing on all of that stuff. It's like focusing only on social issues in the political process. You know, when we moved in the direction of looking almost strictly at litmus tests that involve social issues rather than practical issues is when we began to get off track.
Well, you know, Sandy, government has no role and no place other than military, in the minds of many. And so I don't know if that type of mentality, Sandy, was that way 40 years ago or 50 years ago. When did government become the total enemy of the people?
Well, interestingly, on the social issue side, the people who are conservative and don't want government to do anything, when you get into the social issue debate, it's almost always about wanting government to do something.
Sandy,
affirmatively.
Hold the thought. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Sandy Williams. It's Monday with Sandy Williams, and we'll be back. To the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number as Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And we were talking off the air as we were talking before we went to the break about the inherent dangers where, you know, 80% of Americans think the opposing party will destroy the country. And Sandy, we even move that along the lines of education and how at the root of all of these things, we are just so divided from those perspectives. For instance, you were talking about.
First, I was to make a nexus between those
right.
two. I think that one of the problems is that we're afraid about how other people think. We don't know how they think, but we're very worried about how they think and what their thoughts will do to the fabric of America. So the left is worried about the right's thinking. We're worried that the right is interested in developing an autocratic government, that they're interested in imposing a sort of a white nationalist society upon America and whatever that means.
But Sandy, there's some signs that show to be true.
Of course. I mean, there's definitely kernels of truth to drive this fear.
Right.
And meanwhile, the right is very concerned that the left is interested in developing a big government that's going to be telling them how to live their lives, that's going to be intruding into their lives, that's going to be taxing them heavily, and that's going to be doing things that they think are anathema. They also are worried about the left subconsciously, I think, because they think the left is inhabited by a lot of people who don't look like them and who maybe think differently, have different thoughts. And some of those thoughts relate to this whole, first of all, the education process. So, just recently there was testing done that substantiated that over the last 2 years, the learning levels as tested of American kids has gone down materially and materially probably because of the COVID experience they've had being out of school and essentially being homeschooled.
And Republicans blame that on the Democrats.
Yes, and there's something wrong with the schools, particularly as the schools were unable to apparently adequately react to the COVID
right.
crisis. But it really drove people into something like a homeschooling experience, which homeschooling is fundamentally very much a conservative approach to education, which I think is driven by a fear of having people's children mix with a sea of thoughts in school, a sea of thoughts and a sea of people in a societal setting which is beyond their control, beyond the home control. And there's a great deal of drive to maintain and create a great deal of control by the home over what kind of new thoughts are introduced into a child's head. And all of this has to do with this fear of thoughts, of other people's thoughts. It's You know, I thought America was driven and based on the notion that thinking was to be free and the expression of thoughts was to be free and open, and that it would be that free expression of thoughts that would allow all of us to pick and choose the lives that we want to have, but that's breaking down.
So your parents and my parents had to experience the exact same thing with trusting that when they sent their children to school, that they could trust the American institution and education being a part of that, that I didn't have to second guess those things. So what changed in people now that what our parents thought, you know, well, maybe they were, you know, not well, as...
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, to be honest with you, if you take it to its logical extreme, what they're really worried about is much like book burning. It's the notion that introducing thoughts into someone's head, which are out of bounds, are going to be very destructive. It's like a fear that reading Karl Marx is going to turn people into communists.
But they're out of bounds based on your opinion.
Well, they're based on out of bounds out of an opinion and a fear that that your child won't be able to work out the difference in their own mind between this path and that path, and that they're very subject to being affected in some way that's materially worrisome. And so, you know, that led to book burning. We've always had this problem in culture. You know, the Puritans in early America were burning books because they didn't want people's minds polluted with too much thinking that was out of bounds.
You know, Sandy, and it's that my precious child, I've gotta you know, coddle them all the way through because it's my child.
Well, I think what we need to understand is it's such a gift to a child to give them the opportunity to have thoughts
and
of their own and to forge a life of their own and to break free to some extent of their parents just the way their parents did. We've all gone through this process of getting out of the nest and being ourselves. And we've got to trust our children, and to me, it's the greatest gift we can give our children is to express the fact that we do trust them, and that we will help them develop the value system that helps them sift through all of the thoughts and life choices that they will have in a positive way.
So, Sandy, let's say that way of thinking wins out.
Which way?
The side that says, I want to control what my child learns. I want to control, I want to control what my child learns. And the people right now who happen to, for the most part, be Republicans or conservatives who are pushing this narrative. And so long term, that can't be beneficial to what's in the best interest of our nation. Because long term, that's going to stagnate.
Yes, I mean, historians, if you know, you read history and you'll go back to these periods of book burnings, you know, the Middle Ages. That's what created the Middle Ages was the desire of the Catholic Church to exercise such control over what people thought. They began to control painting. You had to paint in a very flat manner. You couldn't have a human being painted that looked like a human being because that was idolatry, and you couldn't have thoughts that ranged outside of essentially the Bible. And so, you know, the Middle Ages happened. We got the Dark Ages intellectually, and you can move forward to the period of book burning and Puritanical America, took the Cromwellian period in England. History is replete with lessons learned to be learned about the nature of controlling thoughts.
So, Sandy, let's take that back then to...
And incidentally, one of the things that we talk about that we're most disarmed about what's developing in China, about the autocracy in China, is what? It's thought control. It's the autocracy of controlling people's ability to debate things in public and to discuss varying viewpoints.
So let's go back to where we began, where we've got 80% of Americans think the opposing party is going to destroy the country. That narrative is there. That we aren't exaggerating that narrative that you just explained, right?
Right.
We're not exaggerating that. That exists.
Well, and that's part, the fact that people feel that way is what they're trying to protect their children against. They don't want their children to get mixed up with those other people who are trying to destroy America.
So that's the danger. That's the danger.
Yes.
And that thought that you just explained is real. That's not imagined. People really are feeling those thoughts and living their lives in that manner. And so because it's their children, they're willing to do whatever it takes. Right?
Yes.
They're not willing to be open-minded on...
Well, the end, like I said, you get to this point, and the end justifies the means. The end is saving America. Well, saving America is a very patriotic concept. Saving America is what people will go to arms, you know, will bear arms for the purpose of. You know, saving America, it will cause you to storm the Capitol on January 6th. Saving America is such a important concept to people that it will destroy America.
You know, Sandy, saving America, you would think saving America from Russia, saving America from China, saving America from those outside forces. But there's only been one other time when you talked about saving America from other Americans.
Right.
With other Americans being the enemy.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, when you get into a situation like this, where 80% of the people think the other side is destroying the country, that's what civil wars are about. Civil wars are about two opposing sides who think that their view of the way the country ought to be regulated and ruled is the one that's right, and that the other side is wrong. And I mean that with capital R and capital W. That's what civil wars are.
And you know, Sandy, we've now entered into that environment. We're into that environment. And so, you know, as this election, it clearly points out, you know, you've been the midterms and all of the people and the polarization on both sides of this, we're there.
Yes, and I think, to be honest with you, you know, and hate to point a finger on a partisan way, but it's clear to me that if you were going to vote for a future in America that involved less divisiveness, you would vote against Republicans, because I do believe it is the right that is believing that the end that justifies the means here is the destruction of America in its current form, and to make America's Constitution more conservative and to preserve the status quo and to move to back to status quo ante, beating the status quo some while ago, that's what America needs to be, and that they have to put the brakes on the spread of political power in America to those people, those other people that they think are essentially anti-American. And, you know, again, I suppose I'm expressing my view of what really America really is, but my sense of America and the miracle of America is that it's the involvement of all of its people in the progress of its government. And I think what we need to do is, number one, make sure that everyone does involve themselves and vote. And number two, we have to develop a political process that starts accomplishing things and persuading people that government is not the enemy, that government is actually will support the people broadly, including the people who have young children with child daycare and education and education through college, so they don't have to look at that risk, and health care, and these things that would really matter to people. And if government were less paralyzed, our country would be less polarized.
So Sandy, I saw a commercial, the latest commercial from the Republican side of things. And the commercial said for against Tony Evers, Governor Evers, and it said Martin Luther King said, "Judge a person by the content, the content of their character, not the color of their skin." And then they later came back and said, "But Tony Evers is judging white children by the color of their skin." that commercial is running on television stations across the state right now.
There you go.
That's exactly what you are talking about.
Sure. I mean, that's definitely poking this issue of people being terrified about what thoughts and what might be presented to their children that could tear the children's concept of what their life and principles ought to be. And, you know, it's just,
I mean,
that instinct has destroyed civilization, actually.
If you just thought a little bit, even if you're on the right, to think that Tony Evers, a white man, somehow wants to, you know, enslave white children, you'd say, hey, that's insanity.
Yeah.
But they're running that commercial, and there are people who are, as you stated, are saying, yeah, that's right. We are at this apex, Sandy. And you did state, and you don't play sides. I know you don't. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. It means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you have just, you know, laid it out. And so perfectly, you know, we began the show talking about, you know, that this divide between, look, all American citizens, these are American citizens that are at one another's throats.
Yeah.
You know, and so can't seem to find a way to try to find common ground. And then I was telling you about this article that I was reading earlier, and it says dark money groups have pumped $1 billion into GOP campaigns to recapture the Senate. I was telling you about this horrible commercial that's running claiming that Governor Evers, is has it in for white children. And so you can't vote for him because he's judging white children by the color of their skin. And so in this article, it talks about shadowy organizations that are legally allowed to hide their donors have pumped nearly $1 billion into Republican Party's efforts to retake the U.S. Senate, according to National Public Radio. In total, NPR found that more than $1.6 billion has been spent.
$1.6
billion? $1.6 billion.
That's going to get to $2 billion before the election.
It has been spent or booked on TV ads in a dozen Senate races, with three out of every $4 being spent in six states: Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Wisconsin, Nevada, and Ohio. All of those states are clearly key to whether or not Republicans take over the Senate. But I would say to you, Sandy, say I'm a Democrat, and Democrats certainly spend their share of those dollars. But those types of commercials that I'm telling you right now, those are coming solely from the Republican side of things. So it's hard for me to come to grips. It's hard for me to see a way to try to break bread with people who are that far gone, Sandy, that they'll do whatever it takes to be in control of this nation.
Well, what's clear is that the political ads, particularly in the last probably two decades, have evolved to the point where political ads in the last 2 weeks are not intended to stimulate an intellectual thought process. They're intended to stimulate emotional reactions of a sort that are basically driven by fear and anger. So when you look at ads now, just understand that all of them are aimed at stirring up in you not intellectual thought processes. They're trying to paralyze those by stimulating emotional driven responses of fear or anger, all ads. And so What's that ad all about that says that Governor Evers has it in for white children? It's basically to evoke fear and anger in the parents of white children that somehow this governor that they need to vote against is doing nefarious things that are gonna damage their kid in school when they're out of their control. You know, they're in the hands of people who are going to shape their thoughts. And we've come to the point where many people think that education is a propaganda mechanism designed to shape their kids' thoughts, and they want to stop that. And that is what took us to the dark ages.
Let's bring CJ. Hey, CJ, what's going on, man? What do you say?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. Thank you for taking my call. And I truly mean that because most of the hosts now won't.
CJ, I understand why, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, I mean,
don't,
you I know.
Their motto is we take all calls, and they used to, but they don't anymore.
I know,
but
because I consider CJ, myself because a fact checker. Okay, go ahead.
Well, wait, CJ, I just want to say this. CJ, if we were at counseling, you and I, and you told the counselor that...
I would love to go to counseling with you.
Yeah, we should. I think if we went to counseling and then you said that, the counselor would say, CJ, that seems like a coincidence that relates to you. Is there something you might be doing that would cause people not to accept your calls? Now, listen, I think there are plenty of shows out there that are unwilling to listen to contrary thoughts, and we are fully intent not to do that because Earl and I don't agree on everything, and I try to be more of a centrist. But there is this about your calls. Let me just say now, as we're in counseling, that they're very repetitive and that you tend to say the same things about the same set of facts, and they're all that driven. So, I mean, I would just urge you in a constructive way to have this call be different.
But let's talk facts then, Sandy.
Your facts.
The test score. Well, no.
Okay, go ahead.
The test scores are down.
Yeah.
And I love listening to you because you guys are in such denial with your party. And, you know, all we have to do is vote and get ready for the red tsunami because we're living in a democratic world right now. Your party controls everything. And you say I say the same thing. And maybe I do because you don't respond. I believe we are safer with a Republican in office and we're more prosperous. We lost 13 soldiers in Afghanistan. I'm not going to let you forget that.
Well, so yep. there we go.
You want to forget those soldiers, Sandy? Go ahead and forget them. But that's a fact. This president executive order, and I know I get excited. I'm sorry.
Well, I think maybe we should go back to Lebanon.
The same thing too.
Well,
okay. Well, let's look at it. It took the shutdown for parents to actually found out that the kids weren't learning about reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Here, that's what we were talking about earlier in the show. It's been the last 2 years that there has been a rather precipitous and a material drop-off in the test scores. Now, is testing and the way it's done totally legitimate? Is it appropriate? I'm not sure. But the way that I'm talking about the way we test the learning process of our kids, and the learning process of our kids seems to have faltered mightily in the last 2 years when kids were not able to attend their schools, And so that tells me that schools play a fundamentally important role in providing an education process to our kids. That's what we were talking about on the show.
Well, you're in denial because this has been going on for a while. Our test scores have been dropping for a long time, and you know.
You're not going to be able to finish your thought because we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I see what he did.